Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Inside Secrets of the Caribbean. My name is Rhea. I am your host, and I'm really pleased to welcome back Eric DeWicke. He is, well, a simple sailor. We've given away your details of all of your accomplishments in an interview in the past, so we're just going to leave it as simple sailor. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for having me back. Yeah, what a great opportunity.
Yeah, well, I mean, the last time we got into some great conversations and it kind of went on for a while. And we did miss one important thing that I did want to touch on. So that is the reason that we have you back today. Commonwealth of Dominica Maritime Administration. Tell me about that.
Sure. So one of our projects from Northeast Maritime Institute is managing the Commonwealth of Dominica Maritime Administration, the flag state. Basically, every nation has responsibilities, not only domestically, as to how maritime safety, maritime security, environmental protection needs to occur, but basically, how do they interface with the international community? For example, ships coming into port, having the right resources to deal with that, to manage that, as well as having the capacity to deal with ships that fly the flag of that state. So oftentimes in the past, you have nations such as Panama and Liberia that allow foreign nationals to register their ships in the jurisdiction of a small country or a country. And it's actually very common now. There's probably about five or six Caribbean nations that allow foreign nationals to register their ships in their flag. And in 1999, I was approached to go ahead and develop this program for Dominica. And I was a little skeptical, to be honest with you. It just didn't seem... Everything I had heard about open international flags or quote-unquote flags of convenience really didn't settle well with me. So I was hedging a bit on whether I wanted to do this. And really, in fact, I had said I wasn't interested. And then I got a call from some very serious folks in Washington, said, "Hey, Eric, we really need you to do this." And because the programs out there right now are not very solid or they don't do a good job. So we basically, I agreed and we took on the challenge of creating the flag of flag of responsibility versus the flag of convenience. And you know, what I did not want to be seen as is a flag of convenience, especially considering they didn't take care of the maritime personnel, the sailors on board. And that is my whole passion. My personal passion in life is to take care of people who go to sea.
Let me ask you quickly, though, when you say flag of convenience, for those that aren't into the maritime side of things, that's generally tax purposes that they will register in different areas, or what is the purpose of the flag of convenience?
So typically what a open, I will say open international ship registry will do is you will allow vessels to, or ship owners to register their vessels in the flag to in fact lower their tax regime in their own countries that they may exist in. As you know, under international business, you can establish a business in any country in the world. And really, there are like maybe only a dozen countries that say you can only open a business in this country if you are a national of that country. And that's 12 out of 192 nations, right? So under business structure, that applies to ship registration as well, oftentimes. But most nations, the majority of nations, actually don't allow foreigners to register ships in their country because of what's called as cabotage laws. And those cabotage laws are basically protecting trade along the coast of those countries And it really, there are some pros and there are cons to that. It's, you know, you're protecting trade, you're protecting jobs, you're really protecting oversight over that industry through your own countrymen who own those companies or ships. So under international law, basically you can register your ship, for example, or your yacht. As a matter of fact, we have a very large yacht registry in the Mediterranean and in Asia. You can register your ship and basically not get away with anything outside of tax advantages. And really, when it all comes down to it, that's about the only benefit you really get outside of tort law. If for example, somebody gets hurt on a U.S. flag vessel in the United States, we have the Jones Act. And if somebody gets injured and the company is found responsible for that injury, not only do you get to sue them for their failures to take care of you, but as soon as the judgment occurs, you end up with triple damages. So those damages actually escalate. So the judge says, you owe this man $100,000. It immediately jumps to $300,000 in the Jones Act tort law. Wow. Internationally, on the other hand, it's just a simple judgment, right? So a lot of companies will register their vessels overseas in international flags or open international flags, in order to avoid not only taxes, but tort law. And that's usually most of the developed nations that have really stringent tort law for some reason on ships. It's very different on ships than it is if you're a construction worker. So those are some of the reasons. The third reason is having the technical support of the office of that ship registry support your operations, making sure you have all the compliance tools, meeting all the treaty requirements, meeting all of the inspection requirements, the survey compliance, mariner licensing and certification compliance. These are things that just require millions of dollars a year to have in place and really have not only the financial support, but the knowledge and the technical understanding as to how these all apply. And while many nations start out thinking, well, we can take over and do it ourselves, they find themselves in quicksand relatively quickly. So what they do as nations is they will basically reach out to a group like us and say, hey, would you manage this registry? You get an agreement in place. And in fact, Dominica had probably the best agreement out of any international ship registry concept to be developed. They didn't have to spend one cent. And I figured if I was going to take this project, I didn't want them to have to pay anything, which is absolutely everybody does. The country has to pay the vendor to go ahead and develop these programs. What we said is we will go ahead and develop it through our institution, and we will go ahead and build a separate company and develop it and create cash flow and really make it work. Now, the problem with that was we're reliant upon the government to work with us, right? And in small island nations, that's a pretty tough task to look at such technically oriented information and actually pass legislation that works in a world that nobody really understands. The maritime world is like being on Mars, basically. It's bizarre. The everything is different. And so when we started out, we signed the contract in 1999. We didn't register our ship until 2004. Our first ship was registered in 2004. It took us 5 years. Wow. 5 years to get Dominica to get the laws passed and the regs passed. And we wrote all that stuff. All they needed to do was read it, agree with it, or edit it. We all agree on the text and then pass it. It's all that had to happen from Dominica's perspective. Well, it didn't happen. It was a real, real struggle. And again, I'm less angry about that as much as understanding and empathetic to what actually happens in a small island nation. You look at a small island nation, and here's a nation of, say, we'll call it 65,000 people, right? That's a small city in the United States. So they have the responsibilities of handling healthcare and roads and economic development and really keeping people safe and secure and fed and healthy and making sure that crime is down without a hell of a lot of economy around them. And so the last thing that they are thinking about is maritime trade, right? And yet what they don't realize is if they thought about maritime trade, their economy would grow dramatically. I had actually started to develop a school down there, and we had an agreement in place with one of the major cruise ship operators to train and develop and employ 3,000 Dominicans. This was back in the early 2000s. Well, because there was such a lack of either understanding or maybe even intellect, that they just let the project wash away. And, you know, it was really sad because we had spent, you know, a couple of $100,000 developing this school, sending equipment down there. And it just, it was a shame because the Dominica people could have prospered as a result. But because it's such a different world, I don't think it was done out of malice. I certainly don't believe that was the case. But because it's such a different world and people don't quite understand what it is, it's hard to grasp sometimes, you know, and really the maritime industry, whether you're in Dominica or the United States, bureaucrats look down their nose at it. It's just, it's the tradition. You know, it's, I've had many an argument with the U.S. Coast Guard at Coast Guard headquarters as to how they treat the industry. So when this evolves, you know, we do well from 2004 until 2008 or nine, when they had this major economic collapse in Europe. Countries were bankrupt. Spain was bankrupt, for example. It became really tough. And then you started to have new treaties develop in order to boost the maritime economy. Well, since 2010, basically, we've been waiting to accede to, got six or seven treaties, you know, and here we are in 2021. And so what happens is, as a result of not being able to sign those treaties, we don't have the tools to really deliver to our clients as well as they need to. But the good news is they are on the table right now. And, but we've lost basically, when you really look at the first 5 years and then you look at another 10 or 11 years, we've lost 15 or 16 good years of really doing good things for Dominica citizenry. So it's a neat project. It really is a neat project. And I hope that someday that we can figure out how to not only develop this part of the project, but really start to look at developing Port State, the ports, how they're managed, the regulations around their management, in their coastal state as to how to protect their coast, protect their fisheries, and really make sure people can work on, in, or near the water in a very prosperous way. And I actually believe we're heading in that direction finally with Dominica. There's some interest. We were moved over, ironically, to the Ministry of Tourism, and they've been fantastic. They are excited. They're thinkers. They're forward thinking, and I think it's going to be a great relationship.
Well, and I imagine too that the Ministry of Tourism, they see the benefit that, for example, you know, yacht registry, there's a lot of benefit in that.
Yeah, no, it is not only yacht registry, but creating the port of Portsmouth as a haven for port for yachts, I should say. Making sure it's safe, making sure there's the right support in you know, ship chandlers, restaurants, hotels, having all of that infrastructure. You know, Dominica is sitting on an opportunity that is really starting to develop, and it's really nice, but we need to make sure that all the regulatory compliance is in place for long-term sustainability.
How long do you think that's going to take?
I think it's already starting. I'm hoping this year we have all of our treaties signed by December 31st, no later. And I hope we have a new opportunity to work more with Dominica on those local projects, because that's the fun stuff. It's figuring out how to create jobs for local folks. And again, that helps small developing island nations in a tremendous way.
And what do you think the economic benefit will be?
Well, it's substantial when you think about it, especially with yacht tourism. You don't need as much infrastructure, for example, as major cities, right? When you go into these major yacht towns, you know, it just make you're going to end up, you know, having opportunities to develop not only those ship chandleries and restaurants and these really kind of basic services, but you can have engineering services developed down there and set up shop to take care of yachts. You can have electronics vendors down there. The gamut is huge as to what type of opportunities exist. I think, you know, the cool part is Dominica is one of the most literate countries in the Caribbean. Their kids are well educated. Take that opportunity and start to further that education in more technical trades and get those kids back to Dominica instead of them staying away and setting up their businesses. And that's my hope and goal for Dominica, because really the people of Dominica are some of the loveliest in the Caribbean. I love Dominican people. They are full of life, full of energy, full of passion. They are just incredible, incredible people. That's for sure.
You know, I have to say, I have talked to many people around the Caribbean, and I think one of the biggest issues that each and every island has is that the youth are going away, and the culture is starting to become watered down because people from other nations are moving in, and their own people are moving away to find work. So, you know, the idea that you are able to create something that will bring those children back and will continue, because one of the most beautiful things about traveling the world is experiencing culture exactly the way it is, you know, it should be. And I would hate for that to disappear.
Yeah, no, it's funny because I think I've been to 85 countries and I love culture. Yeah. You know, and one of my favorite cultures is in the Caribbean, and each island has its own culture and its own feel and its own vibe. And tourists love that, yeah. You know, and, you know, in the case of Dominica, there's this really great patois or, you know, in the language, the Creole culture. They are truly a homogenized culture of French, English, and Spanish and African cultures that intertwine in the most glorious of ways. I mean, Dominica food, you know, the true, you know, if you're a foodie, which I am, the real, you know, Creole food down there tastes so different than when you go to Guadeloupe or you go to Martinique, this food is just popping with hyper vibrant flavors, and everything is so organic in Dominica because, you know, Dominica has the benefit of those volcanoes, and really that soil is so rich. I've always been sad that they don't expand their banana market, quite honestly, because they have those little ice cream bananas, those little tiny bananas. I forget what they call them. But they're the best bananas I've ever had on earth. And I'm a banana freak. I eat like two or three bananas every day. And honestly, the Dominica banana is hands down the best banana, the small ones, not the big ones that, you know, Dole and Chiquita has kind of figured out how to grow. It's these little tiny bananas. I will never forget my first trip to Dominica, sitting at breakfast and eating one of these little bananas, and my eyes popped out of my head because I had previously spent a lot of time in Indonesia as a kid, and the bananas there were just phenomenal. But this Dominica banana was just starbursting. You know, it was something so simple to really just, it's my fondest memory, first memory of Dominica was popping into that banana and thinking, holy moly, this is like ice cream. You know,
really the banana is what brought you back.
Probably the banana. You know, the banana, and I always love to tell this story. We were going to our first discussion with government, and we were lost. And was me and my mentor from Washington, who was an older gentleman as well at the time. And these two older ladies came up to us. They clearly saw that we were lost. And these two older ladies came up to us and they said, "Hi, you know, you look like you're lost. And how can we help you?" "Well, we're trying to find the government building and we'll walk you there." And we had this beautiful discussion. And this lady gave me a hug as she dropped me off at the door. And she said, "Please help us out. We need jobs. We need development. We need work. We need revenue." And, you know, I literally filled up with tears and gave this lady just the biggest hug. And I promised her that I would. And while there's been lots of struggles with the government of Dominica, you know, trying to get them to really make this as part of their serious agenda, I just love the Dominica people and would never walk away from the project because of that promise I made this one older lady. And I just, I'll never forget that. And I'll never forget the sincerity in her voice. And not that I'm coming in with, you know, barrels of gold. That's not the goal. My job is to create a sustainable economy for the locals, that they don't need some guy from the outside to come in and tell them what to do. They figure it out on their own, and we just help them and we get them the tools to succeed.
That's amazing, Eric. You know, as always, it's great to speak to you, because every time I do speak to you, it's a very positive conversation.
Thank you. No, I, life's too short to be negative. That's for sure.
Well, hopefully we can have you back again by the end of December or maybe January of this coming year, 2022. And, you'll have the news that you've been waiting for a very long time for.
It'll be fun. As a matter of fact, I'm going to send a message when we're done here and just remind them that we're waiting, and it benefits all. That's for sure.
Wonderful. Well, Eric, I thank you again for your time. You are, of course, very, very busy, and I will include the links for the Commonwealth of Dominica Maritime Administration below this interview when it airs, and as well your LinkedIn contact if people are interested in contacting you.
Great. Thank you so much. It's so good to see you.
Thank you. Once again, you've been watching another edition of Inside Secrets of the Caribbean. My name is Rhea. I am your host. We'll see you again next week.